Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I like sucking, but I ain't kidding.
Legit bad podcast.
Fuck those honkies.
Kick ass.
Welcome to Costco. I love you.
He really knows how to suck a wiener.
Welcome back to Legit Bat. We're back again. We did miss a show this week, I believe, but that's fine. Ben couldn't make it, so we rescheduled, and it'll be done tomorrow, and everything will be happy, and everyone will love it, I'm sure. I was going to say something. Oh, new sponsor coming up. We have not solidified that yet, so I will not mention them yet. But it's Pure Pet Wellness CBD products. Oh, I just mentioned it. Shit. No, they're awesome. They sent us a bunch of free samples, so I'll get more into that as soon as we hear back from them with that whole deal. But it seems pretty cool. My pets love it, and I love it because I tried some of it.
We put some CBD oil in the pets' water, and they couldn't stop drinking it. We thought they would just drink like normal animals, and they did not. They drank all of the whole bowl, to their dome.
And it was cool because they were very, very relaxed afterwards. It was great.
It doesn't have psychoactive effects, so it's not a big deal. It just relaxes them.
It made them more manageable.
I have a pit bull who's about 4 years old, and about 2 months ago, she just started acting weird. Like all of a sudden, she like practically fell over while she was walking, which is strange as hell for a dog. So I rushed my dog to the emergency vet, and the fucking vet tries to tell me that my dog ate my weed, and I'm like, look, I've never been so insulted in my fucking life. Number one, I don't lose weed, okay? I know exactly where every bit of it is. So no, my dog did not eat any fucking weed. And I'm offended that you took one look at me and just assumed that I was fucking high, even though I was high as fuck.
Right.
But that doesn't mean my dog's high. Well, I was so offended.
Well, this happened to us though.
It cost me
$180. Our dog did the same thing. Oh, I'm sorry. We didn't take our dog to the vet.
As soon as I realized what was happening, I was like, give me my fucking dog.
I'm out of here. Well, hold on a second. Is that how that works when they just eat it without like any of the heat?
No,
that makes. I was gonna say, okay, so it wouldn't have worked anyway. What a fucking idiot!
Right, that's exactly it. And I didn't feel like having a meltdown in the fucking vet's office. So
yeah,
I was like, I was like, give me my dog. I was pissed. I was pissed because like I felt stereotyped.
I would have name dropped yourself and been like, you know, I was a cop, right? Like I don't do that shit.
No,
but
he should have said
that shit.
He should have said, you know, I was a cop, right? I don't fucking lose my weed.
It's in evidence, obviously. It's like on Super Troopers. We don't smoke it. So I'm Joe, by the way. Jen's here. Ben is also here. Our guest tonight is Corey Hughes. And Corey, I'm sorry I cut you off. What's up?
Yeah, so something's been weighing heavily on my mind lately. And I need you to settle this for me. some people actually don't believe that Jason X is the best of the Friday the 13th series, but it most certainly is. What is your take on it? Because I think none of the other compare to Jason in space. Give me a fucking break.
You're going to hate me so much because I don't think I've ever seen any of those. I was very sheltered.
Hey,
I'm sorry. Am I booked on the right show?
Yeah. And I'm going to second that with I have seen Jason and Freddy. And that is the gayest shit. So no, I don't have any opinion on what is the best gay shit.
No, tell us about how gay the other ones are and why X is the best, though, because I don't know.
Jason in space, bro. Come on. Horror movies in space. I think that's the new frontier because I'm over superhero movies. So I've been doing this show with X Cube 420, Showtime with the Cube, where we review movies. And let me tell you, movies suck these days. They're in a sad, this is a sad state of affairs. It's horrible. I agree.
Yeah, I would 100% agree. We've actually been rewatching old stuff.
Right.
I had never seen Star Wars either. Go ahead, send me all the emails. We watched all of them. Well, all the canon, all, you know, 1 through 9 or whatever with my kid. And
1 through 3. 1, 2, and 3. Like episodes 4, 5, and 6.
Yes. Right. Thank you. Right. So I'm older than Joe by 7 years. So I was like, we're watching these in order, motherfucker. We are going 4, 5, 6 first, then 1, 2, 3, and then whatever 7, 8, 9 were.
Yeah.
And then we started watching The Mandalorian. Well, his kiddo wanted to watch him really bad.
I was like, I gotta catch up on all this hype I've heard my whole life. And I watched it and was like, okay.
Like the last one will always be Return of the Jedi in my mind. That's it.
Yes. So you have to, it was a different era back then. The world had never seen anything like it, you know.
Right.
So. Well, okay. So the funny part is that Joe and I were young, and post the first three Star Wars, 3 meaning 4, 5, and 6, obviously. And during the '90s, it was always, oh man, they made 4, 5, and 6. They've got to be making a 1, 2, and 3 at some point. Joe and I were like, what is Star Wars? And so we had always kind of wanted to watch them, but we weren't allowed to. And then when they came out with 1, 2, and 3, all the merch hit the stores. It was Darth Maul fucking everything. And I remember walking through the stores going, man, that looks really fucking cool. I'm going to watch those when I'm older. Okay. So I had opinions from a lot of people. They're like, no, you need to start with 4. Other people were like, well, since it all came out, you can start it with chronological and go with 1. I tried both. Oh my God. I have never made it through one Star Wars. I, on a scale of 1 to even, I can't. Like,
well, so the funny thing is that I already knew. I mean, growing up with that, friends that have watched it a million fucking times and are total dorks about it, I know the characters and the general plot line without ever having watched a single one. So when we actually watched it, I kind of knew which character was which and kind of what happened. But as I'm watching it, I'm like, this is not near as engaging as everyone made it sound, right. Especially the first
journey. I mean, that's, I know that it's easy to.
But like Corey said, I get it. Like back then, people had never seen that kind of shit. And that was amazing back then. But we're living in now and I'm watching them now. And I'm like, eh, okay. I get it. They're fine.
Well, it's like, it's the same thing. I actually just had this conversation at work today. I had a guy from another shop come in and he's like, hey, you're a Harry Potter fan, right? And I'm like, nope, can't fucking stand him. And he goes, oh, that didn't sound like some. I didn't expect. I didn't take you for somebody that wouldn't like him. And I'm
like, he's like, you're a huge fucking nerd, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like that's exactly what he said. Is I go,
I bet you smoke pot.
I said, yeah. Here's the thing. I said, I'm also not a fan of Star Wars, which is that, you know, why I can't stand either one of those franchises. And I don't begrudge anybody who does because I love Lord of the Rings. I'm right. Like, it's same, but different yet same. I said, I guess the reason why I like Lord of the Rings is that it's basically playing an Elder Scrolls game as a movie in front of you. And he goes, oh, I never thought about that. He goes, okay, yeah, I could see that. I still didn't peg you for somebody that wouldn't like Harry Potter, though. And I'm all, the whole idea of, like, actually riding a broomstick with, like, a wand, I just couldn't do that.
Okay, so like, the movies, I never read the books, obviously, because it was Satan's work, and we couldn't do that. But I did watch the first couple movies, maybe, and they were good, like they're entertaining, but I don't get why people nerd out on them. It was like, okay, it's some dorky ass gay kid, apparently, in my opinion, that goes to a witch school that doesn't exist. That's amazing.
Meanwhile, we've been dorking out for like 5 minutes. So
on Zelda,
what have you been dorking out on?
Zelda.
Zelda.
The new one.
Yeah, the new one came out.
That's awesome. Let me comment a couple things. So first off, on The Lord of the Rings, Amazon just announced that they are building a AAA top of the line MMORPG of Lord of the Rings.
Oh, fuck.
That got mentioned today.
It's,
I'm in.
And it's going to be built by the team that did New World. And so I've been playing the shit out of New World. Like I checked, I've been averaging like 30 hours a week.
Nice.
And, yeah.
You should get paid for that shit. It's like
I should, right? Well,
fucking
tired. Well, that brings me to my new gaming channel that I have because I've been streaming my games because at this point, for me to not monetize every penny of my fucking day is ridiculous, right? So I was streaming to Rumble, but now I'm going to exclusively stream to kick.com, which is the new competition to Twitch because Twitch got greedy and started taking everyone's fucking money.
That's what I heard.
And so Kick is doing 95% cuts with their streamers. Yeah.
Oh, so once you get affiliated, you actually get 95% of the viewership and proceeds and stuff. Because I heard that Twitch does like pennies.
Correct. It's like 50. Yeah, it's 50-50 now when it was like 70, 30 before. But I also launched another channel on Kick where I am doing live daily research leading up to my completion of my book coming up. And so I really like this platform, kick.com. You can find my stuff at kick.com/CoreyHughes. And basically, in preparation for my chapters, I have to fucking go back and reread research that I did years ago, right? And so I'm doing that live on the air for everyone to follow along with on a daily basis. And it's been pretty fucking cool. It's been pretty cool. And no one's ever done anything like it before. Because for the most part, you got to be a hardcore fucking history nerd to sit through some of this shit. A lot of it's dry and just sorting through various documents that to the average person who wants to know who killed Kennedy don't seem to have any fucking connection. But to someone like me, it's like the most fascinating stuff in the world. So,
well, yeah. And those same people, though, that'll say, who killed Kennedy? I really want to know. And then you tell them and they're like, sources. Okay, we'll sit through this 36-hour lecture I have to find out, because that's what you got to do. And that's what Corey does.
That is what you have to do. Like the shortest possible summary of the assassination I did in a 7-hour video.
Yeah,
Jesus.
And now
we've had that conversation with a couple of people, and I'm like, you can't just point to someone. It doesn't work like that. I said that thing is it's such a spaghetti ball. I go, you cannot just point to one person and be like, this is who I think or this is who I know did it. Because this next question, whether it be sources or wasn't the official report this? It's like, yeah, that's the whole thing. You can't just point at somebody. You have to know the backstory. And that is really fucked up.
Yeah. And it takes for goddamn ever. Like,
yeah,
I have 2 chapters left in the book. And then I probably have a month of, you know, rereading and editing, but then it'll be done. So I'm looking at like a July release, hopefully, fucking praying. Nice. And so, but in just going over the material for the next chapter I'm doing, which is on a guy named Kerry Thornley, I've already done like 6 broadcasts, like 90 minutes to 2 hours each. And I'm not even halfway done with the Kerry Thornley files. And so it'll take me another like 2 weeks of like 90 minute to 2 hour readings daily to get through. Damn. And then I got to move on to the last chapter. But see, once I get finished with that last chapter, it'll free me up because then I can go back to any point in the assassination and start reviewing these documents again for people to learn. But it's deep stuff. Like I only get a dozen people watching or so, and half of them are probably like playing video games in the background. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, but that's totally fine. You know what I mean? Like this is like what I love to do. And
just subconsciously
anything, like,
get it into their brain.
Right. That's fine with me. But at the end of the day, I figure if I do this for the next year or two, I will basically have thousands of hours of explanations of the documents that people can reference. And no one's ever done that, because the people who read the Kennedy researchers out there are like the dumbest people that have ever walked planet Earth. They should be banned from ever publishing any more books on their nonsense. I fucking hate them. Like they're the worst people on Earth.
Well, so that's I didn't mention this at the top, but yeah, buymeacoffee.com/JFK book. You can pre-order this motherfucker, and it is thick. Probably dry, but if you're into the Kennedy thing, this is what you're looking for. This is the definitive book. It's called A Warning from History. And so July release, like you said, but you can go pre-order at that site and I'll put it in the show notes. But
right.
And when I did buy you a coffee earlier. I thought I was buying a pre-order, but I didn't know what I was doing on that fucking site. So I bought you a coffee instead. So I'll pre-order the book later.
Coffee we'll read later.
Yes.
Is this the book that you said got you on a dark path where you were...
The occult thing?
Yeah. Okay. Looking at occult stuff and it was pretty dark and you were in a weird place for a minute?
Yeah, but I'm not putting any of that shit in this book.
Oh.
At all.
No, this is hard, cold facts. None of this voodoo nonsense.
No voodoo in this one. This is straight fucking from the documents. Like, people who love a spy thriller will love this because it goes so deep into tradecraft and spycraft. Like, the whole fucking story of the assassination that people know is a fiction that was literally created in a CIA laboratory in fucking New Orleans. All of the incidents, like, and you can put together dozens of incidents involving Lee Harvey Oswald, involving David Ferry, involving Clay Shaw, involving all these people leading up to the assassination, and look at it in the totality of that's the assassination story, more than just what happened on November 22nd.
Well, that's the easy one to believe. That's why it's the history narrative, because it makes sense, or at least makes sense on the surface, right?
Like, nothing about the assassination is true. Like, Oswald didn't work at the Book Depository. Okay, like, everyone thinks that Oswald worked at the Book Depository and hence he shot the president. But the problem, one of the biggest fucking problems I have with Kennedy researchers, is they take shit for granted. They take this fictional story that we've been sold as history and they assume certain things are true. Like, they assume that Lee Harvey Oswald worked at the Book Depository, right? Like, why would anybody ever fucking lie about that? It's like foundational, right? Well, even Oswald, when they asked him if he was in that building after he was arrested, what did he say? He said, the best spy answer I could ever imagine. They asked him if he was in that building, and he said, naturally, if I work in that building. He never said he was in that building, because I can tell you with certainty he wasn't. He was being impersonated all over Dallas and New Orleans and Miami and everywhere in between for... over 2.5 years before the assassination occurred. And even before that, I don't want to get into it tonight, but there was a CIA program called the Oswald Project that basically involved getting a spy into the Soviet Union, which ultimately culminated in his false defection, right? He was probably part of a program called AE Balcony, which was exactly a program designed exactly to do what he did, go to a Russian-speaking country, where he would just be a point of contact there, which the CIA documents were released, I think, in 2018. So still nobody's put together the pieces on that. There's so much good information out there on what really happened with Kennedy. And it just goes completely fucking ignored because it doesn't fit like preconceived notions that, like, you know, the CIA killed Kennedy, right? But people don't even understand what that means.
Well, so. And you mentioned, too, that it wasn't just him that had the doubles. It was numerous people purposely being sent over at different firing ranges and at these different places in pairs, and you went and looked at it and you could figure out who it was at what times that were the doubles versus this, that, and the other, just so that people, that the testimony was, no, we saw them here. And it's like, no, you saw the doubles there. They're actually over here right now. That was all part of their plan. How many people do you, just off the top of your head, how many individuals do you think that they had doubles for in the plot?
Well, it's kind of different circumstances, right? So they were impersonating. Why were there Oswald doubles leading up to the assassination? Well, obviously, because they were setting him up. They were creating this legend of a communist dissident persona, right?
Right.
There are some great examples in the Garrison Files. And I went over this stuff this week when I did my broadcast. There are so many incidents that are attributed to Oswald that clearly were not Oswald. One in particular involves Carrie Thornley, who was one of two men who were impersonating Oswald for a very long period of time. And so Carrie Thornley, and I'll get into his backstory here momentarily, but this incident, he shows up in Baton Rouge to an apartment that an older woman is renting out, and he goes there. And this is at a time when Oswald is confirmed living in Dallas. He doesn't drive. There's no even allegation that he ever went to Baton Rouge, right? So it's And plus, it's been excluded from the official story, so we know it's not Oswald. It was one of the impersonators of Oswald, in particular, Carrie Thornley. So, but he goes to this apartment, and then the information that the woman thinks it's kind of strange because he keeps offering all this information about himself, talking about how he lived in the Soviet Union, and he thinks he hates Kennedy, and he loves communism, and he shoots rifles, and, you know, he basically tells the whole life story, and she's like, why the hell is this guy telling me this stuff? And then after the assassination, when she sees Lee Harvey Oswald on TV and they say he was a communist and start telling his life story, the life story they're telling on TV matches what Carrie Thornley told her when he went and looked at the apartment. So obviously she calls into the FBI and then tells her story. We have, God, I'd say no less than 100 incidents like this, where someone who is later identified as Lee Harvey Oswald goes and does something, interacts with somebody, and just tells his life story, how he likes communism, hates Kennedy, and all this stuff, right? So they clearly spent, from the summer starting around August, beginning of August through November, early to mid-November, you have this like onslaught of fucking Oswald sightings all over the goddamn country, where he's talking about communism and how he has a Russian wife and all this stuff. And so ultimately, let me tell you my theory on Oswald. I believe that Oswald was working with Naval Intelligence or the CIA, or both, because it's not mutually exclusive. Ultimately, he was a Marine. And if his initial recruiting had to have been done through Naval Intelligence, because Marines fall under the Navy.
Well, I was just that was another question that I had, too, because I heard this recently on Mysterious Universe. They were talking about a gentleman that hailed all the way back from like the early 1900s. And they were saying that prior to the OSS, then, you know, them becoming the CIA, that they literally had almost an identical entire operation going in the Navy. And so the reason why they brought it outside of that was because of the funding and parameters of what they would be allowed to do if they got it out of being a military organization. And so
that's
they were
part
like,
of it. Yeah,
they were. Yeah. OK, I just wanted to make sure, because I remember hearing that and thinking, wait, hold on a second. I haven't heard any of this shit before. I've always heard OSS during World War II, CIA thereafter.
Right.
So but they had a whole organization before that then.
When you talk to Naval Intelligence has been around since the beginning of the Navy. Right. But right. They had never been. See, I would say that they had never been as large scale as the CIA, but then as you're going through some of this CIA stuff, particularly in the 1950s and 60s, you'll find a lot of overlap, and that a lot of the guys who ended up in the CIA had been Naval Intelligence, right? So it is not like this mutual exclusive relationship, and I think there is some, or at least there was, some heavy-duty territorial like jurisdictional, like, you know, like kind of a battle between agencies, which definitely still goes on.
Right.
But Oswald, so one of my associates knows firsthand that Oswald was Naval Intelligence. He identified who his handler was, his son, the whole nine yards. But he unfortunately won't come out with that information anytime soon.
How did you find that guy? Was that with your cop skills or what?
No, it's one of my good friends who is also a Kennedy researcher. So, he knows, he identified Oswald's handler because he knew Oswald's handler's son personally.
That's a huge internal lead to be able to have. Holy shit.
But that does not exclude Oswald from having been on loan to the CIA or put on missions. This is not mutual exclusive, right?
So, one is military, one is technically private or governmental at that stage. So it's like, If they need a particular okay or the ability to do something, they might go to Navy Intelligence.
Because Naval Intelligence can operate in America.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Exactly. Whereas vice versa. Okay, that makes sense.
They can all operate wherever the fuck they want.
Well, they do, for sure.
It drives me nuts when people are like, oh, the government can't do that because it's illegal.
Yeah.
When the fuck has that stopped them from doing literally anything anytime?
So the CIA is not supposed to operate in America at all, but at the time of the assassination in 1963, there were half a dozen at least CIA stations operating in America under the JM Ocean program, JM Wave being the biggest out of Miami, run by Ted Shackley and David Morales and George Joannidis.
Well, and those are less known things. I mean, the whole MK Ultra thing on its own citizens, like that was a 20-year at least that we know of now. It's like there's I totally understand what Joe's saying. We're like, now, especially as far as we come in this with the podcasting and people we've talked to, it's like when people say, oh, the government can't. Well, hold on a second. Do you really think they can't, or do they just tell you that they would never?
Well, yeah, break like, that down out. To a small scale with cops. Like, oh, cops can't do this because you're protected by these rights. Corey can tell you firsthand, cops can do whatever the fuck they want. They can pull you over for goddamn anything, make it up, riff, do whatever they want, and there's not a goddamn thing you can do about it. Yeah, maybe later there'll be a court evidence, case,
But they have the protection of the precinct behind them. That's why they can do that. It's the same as these three-letter organizations. They have the protection of the elite behind them or whoever.
Yeah.
Yeah, the CIA are untouchable because they don't work for America.
Right.
So,
fuck.
But yeah, so Oswald being impersonated by Carrie Thornley in New Orleans. And Carrie Thornley ultimately comes to Dallas where he sets him up and he's connected to Marina, right? So there's a lot of sightings of Oswald with his wife, Marina, who spoke Russian and had a child, right? And then I'd say there's at least 6 or 7 incidents in Dallas where Oswald is observed with this person, but he's driving a car. In some of these incidents, he's seen shooting a rifle, not at the rifle range, but off of the highway near the Houston Street Viaduct, shooting at bales of hay. And he's seen with a woman and a child when he's doing this. And so I got really like confused because I'm like, this isn't fucking Oswald. And William Seymour is off running with his mercenary guys, setting Oswald up at the actual rifle range and doing other things. And so I'm like, this has to be fucking Carrie Thornley. And so I was looking for what I needed to do is find a single piece of the puzzle in order to legitimize my theory that Carrie Thornley was the one with Marina setting Oswald up when Oswald was off doing other things. And so eventually I found the piece of the puzzle I'm looking for in New Orleans when Oswald was living on Magazine Street. The neighbor who lived next door was a Spanish woman. I don't recall her. She said that and having that witness state that she saw him over there so often, she didn't know which one Marina was married to. That connected the dots for me that Marina and Carrie Thornley were working together to set up Oswald behind Oswald's back. And how can Oswald be getting set up if, you know, by his wife who has his a conspirator against him in his own home? Well, I believe that Oswald was on loan to the FBI also. We know that he had the alias of Thomas Kane. And I believe that especially during the time of the Mexico City trip, that he was out being flown around the country, kept out of Dallas, kept out of New Orleans, so the conspirators could lay the foundation for the assassination. Why are you going to let your fucking patsy just wander around a city? Or better yet, how are you going to set up a patsy in the book depository on November 22nd, shuttle at least 4 guys into the fucking book depository to pull off the assassination from in there, and you're just going to let your patsy wander around the building, which is what the official story says, because nobody can pinpoint where Oswald was at exactly 12:30. And I'm telling you, it's because he wasn't in the fucking building at all. And when you go back through the witness statements, turns out about a third of the people who worked in that building had never seen Oswald ever until he showed up on television. The people who identified a man in the building as Lee Harvey Oswald, I believe, was William Seymour. William Seymour was a mercenary who was connected to all the mercenary activities in Miami and No Name Key, where the CIA was training anti-Castro Cubans. He was a partner with a guy named Lawrence Howard, who was a dark-skinned Mexican guy with moles all over his face and heavily scarred pockmarked face. And so when you go back through the documents, you'll find that starting around January of 61 at the Bolton Ford, you'll find that at a time when Oswald is in the Soviet Union, because he doesn't get back from the Soviet Union. He's there from 59 until June or July of 62. But in January of 61, you've got Lee Harvey Oswald going to the Bolton Ford dealership trying to buy a bunch of trucks for Cuba to send to Cuba on behalf of an organization called the Friends of Democratic Cuba, which was an organization being run out of the 544 Camp Street address in New Orleans, which was run by a guy named Guy Bannister. Now, if you've ever seen the JFK film, there's a heavy emphasis on Guy Bannister in the first, you know, half hour. And so basically the idea is that Guy Bannister was running a CIA kind of shop that David Ferry and all these Cubans were operating out of. And part of that operation was like stealing arms and shipping them to Cuba to have some sort of uprising. Right. So when you go back through the lore, the official story lore, because this is how it goes, you have like the official story. Then you have what I call the official conspiracy theory. Right. Like the official conspiracy theory is that the CIA killed Kennedy. Right. It's a nice, pretty theory, but it's totally incorrect.
More of a broad stroke. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a broad, too broad of a fucking stroke. Doesn't mean anything. Who the fuck does the CIA work for? And you tell me that and then you'll know who killed Kennedy. Well, right. So
really quick, when you were talking about, you know, why would his own co-conspirators be setting him up without him knowing? I mean, he's technically an official asset working with multiple different organizations within the United States government and upper echelons of what I would assume was the right and smack dab in the middle of Cold War spycraft. It kind of sounds like this is almost like one of those, that movie Shooter, where they have a mission for him to go do to save the president from a sniper. And so he goes to take the shot right next to the president, thinking that he's the assassin, and then they pin the assassination on him. Now, obviously, in that movie, right, Mark Wahlberg gets out and takes revenge. But it almost sounds like that, where he's technically legally hired by the same organizations that are setting him up. So he thinks that he's doing his job, and they're right, just like, just...
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Trust us, like, we have to set this up and this up, and he has no idea that what they're doing is, with his full knowledge, almost setting him up to take the fall.
Right.
Well, that's the
Patsy thing. Yeah, that's the Patsy thing.
Okay.
Right, and there are documents indicating that he potentially had a crypto clearance. I'm not exactly sure what that meant in 1963.
That's what I was going to
say. Means he had 3 Bitcoins.
He had the original Bitcoin.
But he had what was called crypto clearance, and Jennifer Lake, who is like is an amazing researcher who does zero promotion and just has a blog. Jennifer Lake's blog, I highly recommend everybody go spend like a year on it. She did some research into Oswald, and she determined that Oswald was part of our fucking nuclear program and like doing like some sort of inspections at nuclear facilities. Oswald's name is actually signed on the guest registry of the nuclear museum in like Virginia or something like that at a time when he's supposed to be in fucking Dallas. So I believe he was out doing other missions that had nothing to do with nothing. Right. And like he comes back and he goes and he meets with his handler inside the Texas Theater, which actually I'll explain that one. So, you know, you have the shooting of Officer J.D. Tippit, and then allegedly Oswald flees, goes into the Texas Theater, and then he's arrested. Well, it was Kerry Thornley who shot J.D. Tippit. And I have this big backstory on how that came about. And And then what Kerry Thornley did leading between the time that he shot Tippett and makes it to the Texas theater. I'm sorry. I totally lost my train of thought. What were we talking about?
Oh, I don't know.
Him meeting with his handler in Texas theater.
Right, the pregnant woman, right? So he goes to the Texas theater. Allegedly, J.D. Tippett is shot at 1:16 p.m., but that's obviously it's not Oswald, and he wasn't shot at 1:16 p.m. All witnesses on scene put it around 1:06 p.m., and that's a problem because Oswald entered the Texas theater between 1 o'clock and 1:07 as per Butch Burroughs, who was the manager of the theater. So the time... You know, he didn't shoot J.D. Tippett and then make it in 1 minute, four blocks away to go into the Texas theater.
Right.
So he was in the theater and he gets in there and he sits in front of a guy named Jack Davis, who's 18 years old. Now, you got to think it's a 900 seat theater. There's 22 people in the theater. He sits directly in front of this kid. And then a moment later, he gets up and he sits directly next to him. And he sits there for a minute. And then he gets up and he does it again. He goes and he sits directly next to somebody, sits there for a minute, and then gets up again. He does this three or four times when he enters the Texas theater. He eventually sits down next to a pregnant woman. He and the pregnant woman speak for a moment. The two of them then get up and they go back to the lobby. The pregnant woman leaves. Oswald then buys popcorn. Butch Burroughs sold him popcorn at 1:15 p.m. exactly. And... Tippett was allegedly shot at 1:16 p.m., right? So the official story and Butch Burroughs selling him popcorn in the theater, they don't jive, right? So he then at 1:15 goes back into the theater where he eats his popcorn and sits for 30 fucking minutes eating popcorn. Then the police come in and they raid the theater. Now, allegedly Oswald stopped in the shoe store at Johnny Brewer's next door. And then he goes into the theater without buying a ticket, right? This is what allegedly the situation at the Texas theater was. And so then allegedly they call the cops and the cops send 50 people and like a television crew to fucking the Texas theater to film the arrest of Oswald. The filming of the arrest of Oswald is available on fucking YouTube, believe it or not, right? So it was another staged event in a long line of staged events, just like the moon landing. So the story of the Texas theater is fascinating. Ultimately, Kerry Thornley, who was the one who went in without buying a ticket, goes up to the balcony, hides there, and he is arrested and pulled out of the back of the theater. We have Butch Burroughs, the theater manager, as well as the neighboring business, a guy named Bernard Hare, who ran Bernie's Hobby House. He goes out back and he sees what he thought. He sees Lee Harvey Oswald later on television, but he believes for like 25 years that he saw Oswald get pulled out of the back of the theater and arrested and driven away. Oswald was clearly arrested out of the front of the theater. So we have two witnesses who provided statements to investigators that a second person was arrested in the Texas theater, an Oswald lookalike. And that would be none other than Kerry Thornley. So the doubles are fascinating. And then you have Jack Ruby. When you study Jack Ruby, you come to find, and it took me a while to figure this out, but Jack Ruby, between November 20th and November 24th, the day that he shoots Oswald, he is literally seen in two places at once 50 times throughout the weekend. And nobody ever put two and two together that Jack Ruby actually wasn't even in Dallas for most of the weekend. He dipped to Galveston. And most of the sightings in Dallas were actually of his brother, Samuel Ruby. Samuel Ruby looked almost identical to Jack Ruby. And he was photographed at the police station and at the midnight press conference. And Jack Ruby and Samuel Ruby worked as a pair. They were both involved in the setup of Oswald. And this is where I usually lose people. But it's easily provable that he had a brother named Samuel who was only 10 months younger than him, meaning his mom got pregnant right after she fucking had Jack, right?
So Irish twins, yeah.
They were
whores back then. Whores, I tell you.
They'd spit him out like nonstop because, I don't know, maybe you lost one in three. Who knows back then?
They didn't have iPhones back then. They were just banging and drinking Chardonnay or whatever they did. I don't know.
God, I wish I could go back to such a simpler time. I would love the 30s. I would seriously, right? if I had some money, I would fucking love going back to the
70s. I've always said I wanted to go back to the 70s. I'm pretty sure previous life I lived in the 70s because that was like the pinnacle of simple times.
Yeah. It
was
just I'd like live in the red light music, district in New York.
Weed and nobody, they just, sat out by the moon tower and hung out, from what I've heard in songs.
I just like the idea that it was a lot more common that if you decided to do something, then you were accepting the consequences. Like the old picture of the kid with his rolled up sleeves and his cigarette, and he's like two and he's got a beer in one hand. And dad used to tell stories about when he was buying cigarettes for Grandpa John. It was out of the vending machine. And so he would go give him four quarters and he'd get two packs out of the vending machine, you know, from the druggist, which was a non-PhD pill provider who also sold booze.
You know what they call those now? Drug dealers.
Yeah. And you could just, my dad was like, yeah, he's like, I remember being sent into a grocery store because my dad was too busy drinking his beer in the truck and was like, hey, go get me a couple packs of cigarettes. So he would go in, throw some quarters into the machine, and they'd be like, hey kid, what are you doing? He's like, oh, my dad's right there drinking beer in his truck, he wants cigarettes. And they'd be like, have a good one.
It was a different time back then.
Oh, simple. I would love it. Now everything's just so convoluted and retarded.
As a chick, I couldn't go back farther than the 70s, I think.
Yeah, because there were things about shaving back then that we can't move past.
Voting rights and just rights in general, and where your place is in the house.
Oh, right. Yeah, women's rights too.
Rule of thumb.
For me. I could be like a whore in a brothel in the 30s. Like, those are my options.
Boner.
I could be like a housewife or I could be a whore. 70s was a cool time.
Yeah, it was great. It was great for white dudes, especially. I didn't plan on like going into JFK, but I love it when you lay it out because you know it so well. And if anybody's interested, definitely check out all the numerous interviews he's done about this because it goes into detail. Like you said, the quickest one was 7 hours. So if you want a good read, get his book. But I did want to get a sneak preview of what you were talking about before the show about something you were working on. Can you tell us anything about that?
Well, I'm working on a new daily show with this is probably not what you're talking about, but I'm going to tell you this anyway because this is better. So. Okay. I'm working on a new daily show with Johnny Vedmore and Lindsay Sharman. And we're going to be launching that Monday. Yeah. That's like a couple days from now, isn't it? Shit. Yes. Starting Monday.
Couple days.
So we're planning on that being pretty big. Other than that, it's just been the book. And that's what I've been working on. So, but I want to comment on something societally. A big shift is about to occur. Something that the world has never seen. And this is
this is what I wanted to get into because you said state of the world and I want your opinion on this stuff.
Nothing.
So go for it.
This is not super deep on the level you're thinking. This is more entertainment wise, but it's a societal shift nonetheless. So right now we are about to see a major shift in entertainment financially from movies to fucking back straight to video games again. And I say this because Grand Theft Auto 6 just announced that their new budget is going to be between $1 and $2 billion.
Holy shit.
We've never had a fucking movie or any production that has cost that much ever. And so that to me is the biggest statement on where the entertainment establishment is going to be funneling their money in the years to come, especially since movies are bad. And honestly, I think they're bad on purpose.
Yeah.
Because this is all contributing to the destruction of our culture and our society, which is a planned operation, which is being executed on us as we speak, which goes hand in hand with the destruction of our value system, i.e. Bud Light and fucking Target and all this tranny fucking bullshit that's being pushed on us. Faggots, exactly. So this is not when I started to see this. I saw this, it's been bubbling under the surface for years, right? But ever since COVID failed, okay, and this is what I think is happening. Really, COVID was a coup to take over the world. Definitely totalitarian communism, all that shit, and it totally failed. It obviously failed. And so, what are they doing now? They're drilling into us the social issues. Mm-hmm. The social division, right?
Right.
And how do you undermine a fucking people by promoting
their identity?
Well, right. The identity issues and by the promotion of minorities. And I don't say that because it's not good to promote minorities. It's fine to promote minorities. Sure. Everyone should have a fair shot at everything. But equity is totally bullshit. It's a totally fucking dead concept. It's fucking straight up communism. And this happened like it drives me nuts because I'm watching this unfold, and this is exactly what happened to Germany post-World War One. Right. Most people start the story of World War II with Adolf Hitler wanted to kill all the Jews. That's like the story of World War II. That's where it begins. That's like three quarters of the way through the story, honestly. Right.
That was the crescendo. That was the culmination.
Yes. If you come to understand what was going on in Germany post-1918, look into organizations like the Frankfurt Institute. Look into people like Leopold Greenberg, who ran one of the biggest Zionist newspapers in Britain, and how they were promoting communist organizations. It was a partnership between the Zionists and the communists leading up to World War II. That was completely intent on destroying the cultural fabric of Germany. And they were doing it by promoting things like, at the time, interracial marriage, which is now is no big deal. But back then, it was like end of the fucking world.
Isn't that weird that that was a big deal? Even Christians, I remember in the 90s, our church group, interracial stuff was like taboo. I'm like, what are you talking about? They're people, as far as I know, they're still people. Like, why does it matter if they're a different race? That's so weird.
Well, here's the thing. In Germany, like, America's a melting pot, right? We're a bunch of mutts here in America, right? Mm-hmm. But not in Germany. In Germany, that's the fucking Ottoman Empire. Those motherfuckers have, like, you know, thousand-year-old family histories, right? Like, their racial and ethnic pride was everything. And that was being intentionally targeted by Jews who were coming into the country and promoting this communism and all this gay shit. And there's a great speech by Hitler where he talks about how nobody goes to the theater anymore because the theater organizations were all taken over by fucking communists and they were promoting subversive ideologies in the theater.
That checks out today.
That's exactly what's going on today. And that's why the promotion of diversity, equity, and inclusion is not about diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's about undermining the culture of fucking white people in America and the greater West. Period. Well, that's what it's about.
I heard a great synopsis of what you're talking about is they were like, hold on a second. Do you realize that by saying diversity and inclusion, you are excluding the people that are outside of the inclusion and diversity? So what you're doing is you're saying that you're promoting the idea of everybody being equal, but you're doing it in a way that only targets a certain group, which then excludes anybody outside of that group. And as soon
thereby
as
creating
more groups,
non-inclusivity.
Like, as soon as you have that and somebody doesn't fit the group that is being supported, which, like you said, I don't have a problem with that. Everybody just do what the fuck they want. I don't care. But as soon as you start supporting one small thing, everybody wants to be a part of another small thing that they hope gets promoted. So now you have all of these different factions socially of all of these different minority groups that want their say and their comeuppance in the social ladder for the same reasons. It's like you're literally, Jordan Peterson's like, we are going right back to tribalism. Everybody wants to be a part of their tribe. Their tribe is right. And we should fight to keep our tribe alive and the best.
So the genius part of that, though, is that they're creating tribalism, but they're making the one tribe seem like they're the tolerant tribe against the intolerant tribe. It's still creating a tribal atmosphere. They're like, this is the right tribe. It's the same thing what they call Nazis did. They're like, mm-hmm. no, the whites are the good tribe. That's the bad tribe. They're doing the same thing now, but they're just kind of doing it backwards or in a different way. It's genius.
What's the reason for these tribes being better? That's my problem. I would rather have a tribe of people who are great instead of a people who are the Aryan race. Like, what's so great about being blonde-haired, blue-eyed? Is it genetics? Like, is that
they're hotter.
You have to, goal was?
Well, here's the thing. You have to understand that the entire creation of Hitler in the first place and the entire Aryan thing was a direct response to the overt Jewish supremacy that was being pushed by the Zionists. Period.
Another tribalism.
Like the worst, honestly, the worst fucking supremacists on the planet are Zionist Jewish supremacists. Period. I mean, they are the scum of the fucking earth. They make fucking people like Hitler. When you come to understand that Hitler and the rise of Nazism was completely reactionary to what was going on in German culture at the time, to this intentional undermining, it's like it changes the game. when you come to realize.
I get that, but that's such a childish response, in my opinion.
Thank you.
That's because these aren't adults fucking handling this. I mean,
not when you have a culture that you're looking to preserve, but you have a minority under 3% intentionally trying to destroy that culture that is enjoyed by the 97%.
Which I
just say honestly that you could honestly speak that. Go ahead, Ben. Sorry.
No, you're fine. I was going to say, which I get that, but they're literally, I get what you're saying. The 3% by trying to preserve what, or at least promoting that they're trying to preserve their nationality, is then encroaching on somebody who is also doing the same thing. Boom, you have a massive war. They come in and they're like, no, you guys need to observe us, because we need to preserve our shit. And it's like, well, hold on a second. 97% of us are preserving our shit. So you can go preserve your shit, but go do it somewhere else.
And that's really the problem. And that has been the problem throughout society. And the reason that Jews have been really expelled from over 100 different countries is because of a failure to assimilate into that culture. That's ultimately what it comes down to. An attempt to, and not only a failure to assimilate, but the active engagement of the promotion of cultural things that are completely abhorrent to the host culture.
Right, and a lot of those things that are abhorrent are Talmudic things.
Yeah, 100%. All this transgender shit is being pushed because it comes from the Talmud. There's 8 fucking genders in the Talmud, okay?
Right, and here's the other genius thing about this.
Oh, sorry. I mean to cut you off, but I would love to know what these genders are.
Oh, just hang on. So this is the other, what I was going to say earlier, the genius thing about this whole psychological operation is that they're making it seem like people that point these things out are white nationalist Nazis. Yes. And so, therefore, the things we're saying now could be construed as you're racist, you're anti-Semitic, you're blah, 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 blah. No, we're pointing at Corey's pointing out facts that he's gleaned from thousands of hours of research. Go look it up yourself, but they won't. They'll just listen to the media say, oh, no, if anybody says that, they're anti-Semitic, white nationalist Nazis. And everybody just goes blink and tunes out and they go on with their Starbucks fucking drinking
day. They
don't
want to get labeled as that. Like, the second that you start throwing that out there, it's kind of like the whole silence thing. Everybody's going to distance themselves from what the tragic and abhorred narrative is. So like now the idea is they're trying to force everybody to take a side by saying that if you don't, you're taking the wrong side.
Silence is violence.
Right. Silence is violence. It's the idea that if you don't say what they want you to say, it means that even though you're not saying anything, you must be a part of the other side, and that side is bad.
Right, and that's why you got to stop caring what people
think. Whether
you
like it or not.
Right, people need to have confidence, objectivity, and values. Those three things.
That's why the people that are liked the most now are the people that speak, but they speak in a way that goes, I'm not picking a fucking side. I don't give a shit. Let them fight it out. People love those people because they're not staying silent, but they're not falling into one of the traps of the sides. They're just going, this is all stupid. I'm not picking a side about humans versus humans. Have we not learned from history that that doesn't go well? And then,
shout out Charlie Robinson. He said one of my favorite things. I'm paraphrasing, of course, but he's like, oh, when people are like, oh, you're a Nazi. He's like, sure, whatever. I don't even care anymore. Call me whatever you want. I'm a Nazi. I'm a white supremacist. Whoa, boogity boogity. I don't care.
I wear button ups and wear glasses. Like,
and I'm a bald head. Fuck off.
What you were saying though, and I'm gonna you can hate me for this, Corey, if you want, but I'm gonna caveat it to the listeners. Corey's not saying that Nazism was good or how it was carried out was good. Like, that's you have to look at the bigger point in what he's saying, the underlining point of why it came about. Because, like you said, everybody starts World War II at the majority of the time when the Americans got involved. And at that level, it was already 30 years into the making of what was going on and how it was carried out. Also, there was a lot of drugs involved. But how it was carried out was a very tragic and abhorrent reaction to something that could have been handled much differently, but still not a great thing that was trying to be done. So it's like, World War II is one of those perfectly 40-year-long saga, tragic stories of exactly what happens. And going back to the broader point that you brought up, we're watching this happen again. To go back to the video games, I 100%... Oh, I'm fucking fading here with the lighting. It's going directly into getting you away from reality. And when you step into reality, you don't know what side to pick, which breaks down morals for reality. pretty soon, a $2 billion game, which is going to be a massive RPG style MMO. You're going to interact with other humans. It's like Ready Player One and a bunch of these other series with the VR, the AI, the fact that now these games, you can literally create a completely different identity with zero consequences except what's in the game. You will live in a game that has completely different rules than what society has. That's how they break down the society and the morals and all of the things that we typically would stand on, is that they're getting you out of a short 1.5 to 2.5 hour screen time that you know isn't real, superheroes or whatever have you, and it's, like you said, usually shitty in and of itself, and they're going to put you into a game that is so much more realistic, and you have the freedom to do all of the things and act all the ways that you didn't get to do in the real life. That's going to absorb you out of reality. As soon as that happens and you're plugged in and you buy into it, they have 100% control over your actual life.
Like, no, so that's what I was going to go, not to cut you off, but and Corey, I want you to comment on this, but it's gone farther than that, where it's already to that point where the youth of today, and that makes me sound old, fuck off, but the youth of today are already playing out what they see in video games and movies like it's a video game or a movie. They're acting in real life as they would in a game or what they've seen on TV shows. It's fucking terrifying because they don't see the consequences of what they're doing in real life, because they're like, oh, people act like this all the time. I've seen it on TV and I played it on video games. Whatever, people act like this, no big deal. And so I don't think they need to erode morals or anything by putting you in a VR state. They're eroding morals in the real world and how people act day to day. People don't know how to act with each other anymore. That's more terrifying to me than a VR world, because I can opt out of that. Can't really opt out of real life that easily.
Well, they had to erode this world so that it would be easier to get us into the VR world. So it will be a more of a lateral move. It won't be something that's very drastic. We can be like, oh, I already do this in real life. I'll just make it bigger and better in this VR world.
Well, I think insidious thing of what we're seeing in society now is that they're targeting kids.
That's what exactly where I was going to go. We're thinking of it from a different generation where that didn't exist. We already had hard lines that were kind of integrated in us watching this progression. These kids are getting born into this. It's like the whole, you know, Bane quote, you embrace the darkness. I was born into it. It's like these kids don't know a different reality. Their reality is a subversive reality. So to them, it's an easy choice when things don't go their way, like kids do, to not accept the consequences in reality of what's actually happening. They can just go get the fuck lost and do whatever the hell they want. And it's almost just as real, if not way better, than what they're currently experiencing. Instead of understanding the other side of that is how you get to be appreciative of these little things like video games and movies and things that we have. They just don't, they're on a different level because of the time frame in which they're born, which is absolutely terrifying as a parent to watch this kind of be a thing that's going on. It's like, just hold on tight to your kids and
meanwhile, they're being judged by every single person around them because every aspect of their lives is on social media. So they're being told how fat and ugly and stupid or gorgeous and amazing and beautiful they are all at the same time. And their emotions just cycle. It's insane.
Right. Think about how you were as a teenager with none of this. And think about how difficult it was. And now maximize that times 1,000 or 1,000,000. It's like,
but it wasn't that difficult,
the pressure they're
feeling. We felt, Joe and I were just listening to Good Charlotte. We were on the patio singing karaoke, drunk, being stupid. And all of the Good Charlotte songs back from the 90s are like, I don't like your rules. Fuck you. I'm going to go do something different. That's the message that they're putting out. And that was our mentality. We were like, I don't like this. I'm going to leave and make a change. I'm going to do something different. And now kids are like, oh, I don't like what you're doing. I'm going to kill myself about it. Or I'm going to cry in a corner and I'm going to post it on social media. And if I don't get enough likes, I'm going to kill myself about it. And it's just all about, I just can't even be here anymore. And we as kids, we would get shit on all the time and be like, fuck you, I'm going to rise up. Like, we were constantly being pushed to rise up with all the negativity. I mean, it's like the, you know, whatever, hard men make good times and good men make weak times, whatever that whole thing goes. But we're living in that world right now where like the weakest people are about to be taking care of us when we're old.
Yeah, like I 100% agree, and I thought about this because those time frames are typically within each one of them is typically about a century to 75 years. So you end up having from the 30s to the 2000s, starting around the Great Depression-ish, you have very hard times creating very strong people. Those people are then what made really good times. But then those good times are now what we're moving into. We're moving into the good times making the weak people, and we're about to see those weak people create the very hard times again.
Yeah, see, I would say that the good times were like, you know, the last 50 years or so. I mean, relatively speaking, of course, but they certainly made some of the most weak people, my generation included.
Absolutely.
I'm very... unfortunately considered a millennial, and I don't identify with that,
so I don't ascribe to that.
Yeah, you can fuck off on that. But the generation after millennials is actually way worse.
That's exactly what I'm saying. We were a part of the good times. I would agree with you on your time frame there. My thing is that the whole cycle typically lasts around 100 years, and you can look at this throughout history, the rise and fall of different things. It happens quick, but if you watch the lead up to it, you start to see the longer, bigger picture of how it got there. It's like we were a part of the good times, but we are now seeing the start, not of the bad times. The bad times are some ways off. It's like we're seeing the start of those good times that we were in making weak people. And then those weak people after that are going to create the hard times. And it might fall the fuck off of a cliff if they can pull the trigger on it faster than what we're seeing.
Yeah. And Corey's fucking yawning over there. I'm sorry, we've been yapping forever. Like, what do you think about the current situation, state of the world and all that stuff?
Oh yeah, we're doomed.
You're a little older. Meteor. Not by much, but you're a little older than me, at least.
I'm 64.
No, you're not. Fucking liar.
I'm 110.
Without being too pessimistic, because Charlie does that very well on his own, what do you think... What do you think about like the rest of your lifetime specifically? Like, fuck, you know, certain dates. Like, what do you think by the time you're on your deathbed, which could be 2 years, I don't know, but what do you think you're gonna see as far as crazy shit? Because you said we're at a turning point with the video game thing and all that shit. Where do you think that leads? Does it lead to a Ready Player One future
No, what I'm more concerned about are these goddamn communists pushing their bullshit. But honestly, I've never seen, as someone who I consider myself to be an historian, and I'm very, very well educated on 20th century America. And I am shocked at the level of people who genuinely know what's going on and who's behind it. It's unbelievable. I've had private conversations with normies out in the real world recently that have just shocked me. You know, people know what's going on.
In a good way?
In a good way, yeah.
Oh.
So people know what the fuck's going on, which is shocking to me.
Do you think a big part of that was the failure of the pandemic?
Fuck yes. Fuck yes. Because the pandemic was such bullshit, I can't believe they even attempted it. Like,
yeah.
Go back
and look at the premature. Doesn't that give you hope for humanity, though? I have a lot of hope for humanity with the failure of COVID and then the rollout of all these ridiculous things. It seems
unless
obvious
people go to jail
point.
Or have their heads cut off or are hung in the public square, like nothing is going to continue. Like, I hate to say it, but like, unless we have a river of fucking blood, like there's not going to be change. Period.
Yeah. And that's there every revolution.
We need vengeance on these people who did this to us. We need to go into the fine details, figure out who did what, who pushed the propaganda, then round them all up and try them as traitors. That's exactly what needs to happen.
But that's a weird precedent. I don't know. I don't know if
never
that's
gonna
necessarily
happen because
the right
our government is corrupt.
I don't know if it's a weird precedent. It's kind of a historical precedent. Look at the French Revolution.
And
that's
look
exactly
at
what they did.
Though, like, look at where we are right now.
History repeats.
Different. It's yeah. different, though. We could make it different.
I think it's like waves. Like you see a larger up and down, and every single time that it reaches a new height, you also see a new low at some point after that, and then it goes back up a little bit higher, and then it goes down a little farther. I 100% understand where Corey's coming from, but I also get what you're saying, Jen, because I think that there's a possibility of doing it without bloodshed. and without this insane idea of massive revolutions, basically worldwide throwing over the elites or whatever you want to call them, the hand that's unseen. But I also think, just based on where we're at and historically, I don't see that being how it plays out. Who was it that said there's a certain kind of peace only to be found on the other side of war? It's one of those things where I don't think that we couldn't see peace without it, but I don't see it going that way, unfortunately.
The best way I've seen it described, especially in the last couple of years with people kind of like opening their eyes to this stupid shit that's going on, is the main thing is do not comply. I don't know how far that'll take you, but if literally everybody just didn't comply with all these stupid things, it would go away, because it's the ant and the grasshopper thing. The grasshoppers can't control that many ants that are just like, fuck you, I'm not wearing a mask, I'm not doing this, I'm going to go to the store and do my shit. If everybody did that, it would be totally different. And if they did that on every level of every law, stop paying taxes.
I think that's the big thing. The taxes is the big thing. Like, nobody should be paying your fucking taxes. Most people don't have a choice. Most people just have the money come out of their checks automatically. They don't have any choice in the matter. But for those of us out there who work in independent media or don't have to punch a clock every fucking day, like, there shouldn't be 10 cents going out of your fucking pocket to the government, period. I haven't paid taxes since I had a job last, which was like 2016.
I'll never bleep that out.
Like, no, they can put me on fucking trial.
Do you get letters from the IRS ever? Do they even notice?
No, because I don't file. Awesome. I don't file. I don't nothing. They only come after you if you file and lie. If you don't file, they don't fucking come after you. So maybe eventually they can try. But, I'm not worried. They have to put, at this point, they would have to put me on trial. Like, any debt over a certain dollar amount requires a trial.
I worry about you, though, not because of you not paying your debt, but because of what you're doing for the people that are looking for what is real, because I see that being, it could be pennies to them, but I do see them using that avenue, as their way to go after somebody who is shining a big old fucking flashlight and shit they don't
then
want.
I can go into any trial they put me on and say to the jury, I'm only here because I solved the Kennedy assassination and I'm being targeted.
That'll be the news headline. They're like, and we got
and
a
he
guy
claims,
saying this.
He claims mental insanity as his defense. Okay. That's what would happen. You know that's what the fuck would happen.
There'd be a mistrial. They'd be like, you can't say that.
There's so many ways to get a mistrial and to get shit thrown out. It's unreal. The things we don't learn, because obviously if we did, none of this would work. And Andrew Benjamin, shout out his ass, we had him on. He's a great legalese dude that talks about how you get out of this stuff. It's not as hard as you'd think. You do have to know what you're doing. Don't just go in there and be like, fuck you, that's not gonna work. But there, I mean, you could.
I think that's the most fun.
Send me the video if you do
like
that.
Eat a dick.
I'm doing 25 years.
So you have to lead with eat a dick and then be super knowledgeable behind that for every other thing you say.
Yeah, well,
this is what I want to know. If the government came to you and said, you haven't paid taxes in 10 years, we want money. And you just said, go fuck yourself, I'm never paying you. What could the possible consequences be? They can't lock you up for the rest of your life. What are they going to do? I mean, what can they possibly, they can put liens on your shit. But in the we don't own anything and we're going to be happy world, how are they going to do that?
They already have liens on our shit. We already have to pay property taxes.
Pretty much.
Yeah, everything's on loan.
Yeah, like I have, man, and that's another thing. Like looking at, and I want to talk to you, Jen, about, because you're in the mortgage business, aren't you?
Yeah.
So there's some,
Well, hold on. Before you guys go into that, I got to pee and I got to go. So.
All right.
Okay, pee and go.
Good to know those two things. Thanks for letting us know you had to pee, but
love talking to you. I'll see you guys soon.
See ya.
Have a good go and a piss.
Thank you.
All right, bye.
But it looks like mortgaging a house is like never a good deal, like under any circumstances, no matter what terms you get. Because
it's a scam.
It's a fucking rental that if you fuck up anything, you pay it off and you don't pay the property tax, they take it from you, right? So really, it's just a long-term rental that you can make modifications to. So,
and you can get money out of it. So yeah, I agree with you. And I'm in the mortgage industry. It's very weird, but I get what you're saying. So what they do is the interest rates go up for various reasons that are boring and I'm not going to go into, but then what the companies will say is you can refinance in a couple of years when rates go down. So they get you, but if you've paid it, just say rates don't go down for like 15 years and you have a 30-year mortgage, You probably have, depending on when you bought your home, possibly $150,000 of equity in that home, and depending on where housing prices are. So that's very, very tempting to people, especially with the way that social media or just the media in general pushes, you need to keep up with the Joneses and have all of this stuff. You can cash out your house and get 80% of your home's value and come out with $100,000 in your pocket, but you have to pay that mortgage for 30 more years.
So tell me, how do you feel about this rule where like broke people with bad credit get like a discount and like people with money and good credit have to like pay extra fees? What, tell me all about this.
That did not go through.
Oh, it didn't. It failed. It didn't.
I saw that come up.
That was the dumbest
up,
thing I've ever seen. That was like straight fucking communism out of the book. That was okay, like right out of the textbook.
But that's oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, not to play devil's advocate on that, but what I always wondered is why people with poor credit have to pay more for their loan. It's charging people that have less money more for the loan than somebody who has more money, who would be more likely to pay that loan than people with less money to pay a higher loan.
And you'll see what I'm interested in is, what I'm interested in is if Biden pulls some bullshit shenanigans and people with like shit credit can get a fucking house, me and you might have a conversation. So I might try to take advantage of some of Biden's bad decisions.
People with shit credit can buy a house right now. You could talk to me right now about that. Actually, there are a lot of the government-backed programs offer high debt to income and low credit loans. Just FHA, USDA, VA. Like, are you a veteran?
No.
All right. Well,
can I lie?
No, you can't. But FHA, you could get. So typically the rates are a little bit cheaper, but you have to pay mortgage insurance. So monthly, you'll be paying more, but you can get a home loan. Housing prices aren't awesome right now. I'm the worst loan officer. I tell people all the time, I'm like, you can buy a house right now. You totally can. But prices are really high and the rates are high too. Like, it's not the best time. If you have to, absolutely do it. You can refinance. And any loan officer listening probably hates what I'm saying now.
I think I might take advantage of like the financial turmoil that's going on, because if the country ever gets its shit together, I won't be able to do that. You know what I mean? So
you could at least have some equity and cash out and then be like, all right, I have all this cash in my pocket. I'm never paying my mortgage again. Like, you could do that too if you wanted to.
Right.
I'm not offering illegal crappy advice, people. I do have a license that I have to uphold. I'm just joking.
Financial advice,
no,
but
I'm
used to work
around. I'm just saying people can do whatever they want technically.
Yeah, they can. I used to be a process server and we evicted people out of their houses basically at gunpoint. And there are ways to work the system where you cannot pay your mortgage for years and stay in that house because it's just stuck in the court system.
Well,
you know what you're doing, it's possible.
There's a lot of options too that servicers don't want you to not pay your mortgage. They want you to get on your feet and they'll offer a lot of options for you. So we switched banks at my company, and that's kind of a big deal because they couldn't onboard us for 30 days. So I didn't get a paycheck for like a month. And I had to cash out all of the assets we had just to pay our mortgage eventually. And I called and they were like, hey, I was like, can I put my loan into forbearance? I've never paid late. I have nothing late on my whole credit. I have good credit. Like, we've been great customers. And they're like, sure, is it related to COVID? And I said, no. And they're like, well, are you sure? And then I thought about it and I was like, well, the mortgage industry crashed 100% because of COVID, and I work in the mortgage industry, and the bank that I worked for went out of business and let us all go. This is all in my head. So eventually I was like, yeah, you know what? It is due to COVID. You're right. It's very indirect, but it's 100% due to COVID. Guess what? They asked me zero other questions after that and said, cool, your loan's in forbearance for 90 days. You don't have to pay for 90 days. No questions asked. And we onboarded with the bank and I was able to pay all of it back in like a month. We weren't late on any payments, but still zero questions asked. They make it very easy.
What I was talking about is people that we were trying to evict, that we would go out there to evict them and they hadn't paid for like a year and a half. At that point, that's when we got called in to literally remove them out of their house. And they found technicalities in the law and stayed there for another fucking year. These people knew what they were doing. They stayed in that house for about 2 years, mortgage free, while they saved every penny they had to skedaddle the fuck out of wherever they wanted to go. Like, it's like a savings account. You're like, yeah, I'm gonna live here, fuck this place, for a couple years.
So the credit system in general, you can get a house and just default. Also, you can get a credit card, rack it up and never pay the bill. You can do all of those things, but the social credit or credit system makes it very difficult to do other things if an emergency occurs.
Yeah, it's more societal pressure.
No car, right? You can't go get a car because you fucked up your credit when you were 18. I'm not talking about myself or anything, but all of these problems happened to me because when I got a credit card at 18, or I think I got two, just because I was a college student, I spent all of the money on the credit cards and was like, well, I don't have a job, so I don't know what the fuck those assholes were thinking. And I never paid it. And I had bad credit for 10 years. And I filed a Chapter 13 bankruptcy, paid it all off, and I still had bad credit. Other people...
Credit's a fucking scam, too.
Chapter 7 wipes it away, and they have good credit in 2 years. It's wild.
She's not talking about me.
Yeah, that happened. But you have to understand that you can do all of these things. It's fine, but just don't expect to need something in the future. It's like shitting on your roommate. If you go to your roommate and you break everything in the house and you eat all their food and you say fuck you and you still live there, but then you can't pay rent the next month, don't expect that person to not kick you out. That's it. It's just, but if you don't need that person, if you have somewhere else to go, you can say, yeah, I did all this
right, shit. So what I was talking about with the do not comply thing is that if we did that on a mass scale, I don't even think it needs to be 100%. Maybe 40% of people just said, no, we're not playing this game anymore. We're not paying taxes. We're not doing the we're not paying our car registration. We're not doing this stupid shit anymore. It would crash so fast because people wouldn't get paid in the government because people weren't paying their registration and people aren't paying their taxes and all this stuff. If you had a certain critical mass of people that just said, we're not doing this anymore. We're not playing this game. Go fuck yourself. If there's enough of those people, the whole thing would just fucking
You have
to
think about those people, too, who work for the government, the good ones, the people who are just innocent, who like work for the DMV.
They'll figure
just
it out.
Say, yeah, you'd have to offer them something like, hey, I have a commune on 100 acres. I'm going to crash this shit. Do you want to come with me? Get some people on board, too.
Yeah. Sorry, Corey. We've been talking for a bit. We can wrap up now, too. I know you got sleepy eyes.
I'm tired.
It's either sleepy eyes or sexy eyes. I don't
know. No, I appreciate you guys having me on.
Of course. Plug anything else you want to before we get out of here, and I will put your links in the notes.
Nope. Just go buy my book, buymeacoffee.com/JFK book. The big thing is you get my notes with it when you do the pre-order. The day that book goes for sale, those notes are going to be like $50. So get it while they're cheap.
Good. And also, did I get this right? CoreyHughes.org, right?
Right. Right. Correct.
Right. You got the org because you're a fucking professional.
You got it.
I love it. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. We will catch you tomorrow, actually. Corey's counterpart, Chris, is going to come on. We had to reschedule him, but he'll be on talking to us tomorrow about fucking whatever, probably his documentary. But love you all. We'll see you later.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin Marshall credit card bill.